In 1906, the front page of the New York Times boldly declared, "There is life on the planet Mars." This wasn't satire. This was science. Well, at least as the world understood it then. At the heart of this fevered belief was a man named Percival Lowell, who claimed he saw canals carved into the red planet, evidence of a brilliant Martian civilization fighting for survival. Tonight, we step into that era of wonder and obsession, when the public and even great minds like Tesla and Alexander Graham Bell were convinced we had neighbors just across the void. With us is David Baron, author of The Martians, to guide us through the mania, the mystery, and the downfall of a dreamer who changed the way we looked at the skies. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is David Baron, an author, journalist, broadcaster, public speaker who writes about astronomy and other sciences. His latest book, The Martians, The True Story of an Alien Craze That Captured Turn-of-the-Century America, was published in August 2025, and he is our guest tonight. David Baron, I've got to tell you, I grew up watching cartoons, watching TV, reading books, Edgar Rice Burroughs, The Martian Tales of John Carter. I loved it. I was fascinated with the Red Planet, the storylines, the concepts, that it is so close and maybe life exists just to the left, right? I mean, it's right there. Why of all of our planets do you think Mars has become the token of our entire galaxy here as the place for life to exist and our fascination so deeply entrenched in it?
Well, I think we had similar childhoods. I mean, I remember on Bugs Bunny cartoons watching Marvin the Martian. And back in the 60s, there was that popular sitcom called My Favorite Martian. Right. My family used to watch. But that was the exact question that I had that led me to write my book. What is it about Mars? Why is it always Martians and not Saturnians or Venusians and so forth? And, you know, I had heard a little, and you said in your introduction, about the canals of Mars. I knew there was this period when people talked about these weird lines on Mars that maybe were canals. And so I started to do some research. And what really struck me was that I didn't realize is just how seriously the idea was taken. And that long before Martians were staples of science fiction, they really were thought to be scientific fact. And so why Mars even today has a special place in our culture, I still trace back to the period I write about in my book, which was right at the turn of the last century. So the 1890s and the first decade of the 1900s was really the peak of Mars mania.
All right, David, I have to call you into question for this. I mean, you're a journalist, and you mean to tell me that when the face of Elvis appeared on Mars, that wasn't proof for you in the 70s? And that was the turning point. I remember that being splashed on the cover of The Inquirer and the Weekly News Report and everything, that funny face that is seen in the shadows on Mars. And everybody was positive that Mars was either paying tribute to Elvis or that they were proving that that is where the king originally came from and returned there. I bought in hook, line, and sinker. I'm not a bright man, David, but I sure do like my entertainment value. But there has been so much of that. And I mentioned the face on Mars, the pyramids of Mars, that whole concept, because I started this journey with radio 20 years ago, and I had a chance to sit down with a gentleman by the name of Wayne Herschel from South Africa. And Wayne had written a book called The Hidden Records. And he came to Minnesota, and he was doing a talk at one of the local libraries here. And what fascinated me was talking about how we've lost the knowledge of our past. And, you know, a lot of it's subjective. You can certainly lean into some of the concepts. Well, it does seem like the pyramids and so many of the ancient cultures are based on some kind of star leadership. And then he said, but David, it gets deeper. Watch this. And he took the map of the Egyptian ruins. And then he took the map of the Aztec and Mayan ruins, and he put them all on transparencies. For kids that didn't grow up in the 60s through the early 90s, we used to have this big machine that was like a TV screen.
Right, the overhead projector, yeah.
The light, and you'd lay these sheets on it, and it would project it on the wall for you. And he laid each one down and he extended it and said, look at this. This lines up with Pylades. And this looks, each one of these setups are identical. And he said, but Dave, I'm about to blow your mind. You've heard about the pyramids of Mars? And I said, right. But I've also heard that what it is it just depends on the time of day when the sun hits Mars, and shadows give these affect that there's something more there. And he said, no, look at this. And he goes, and I'm not making this up. Go print out these images and do an overlay yourself. And David, he overlaid Aztec, Mayan, Egyptian, and then put Mars over it. And the ruins lined up with the exact same ruins that we have here, or the pyramids that appear on our planet. And I got to admit, my brain kind of started to sizzle, right? And I was like, what does this mean to you? He said, this is their calling card. We were originally colonized there. We eventually moved here when things got bad. And he said, and we're from Pylades. They're marking these areas. So when other visitors come over and they see these key graphs on our planet, they know, oh, Pylades is involved here. And I was like, as absurd as it sounds, I couldn't fight the math. The science of this whole thing laid out really spectacularly.
Well, I mean, you know, we as a species are very good at looking for patterns and inferring patterns. I wasn't there with you when you got that demonstration. Perhaps I would have been wowed as well. But think back to what happened over 100 years ago. Percival Lowell, this brilliant, highly educated man from Massachusetts, also very wealthy, devoted his life to studying Mars, and he was seeing patterns on Mars that convinced him that something odd was going on. He saw these lines on Mars that seemed so straight that it was hard to explain them as anything but artificial, and they always seemed to intersect, many of them, at the same places. And he inferred this grand story that this was proof of a civilization on Mars, that Mars was a dying planet. Mars was running out of water. And the Martian civilization, in order to survive, had to tap the meltwater from its polar ice caps. And it was this whole elaborate theory that really took off. And the public was convinced, you said in your introduction, folks like Alexander Graham Bell and Nikola Tesla bought into this. It was on the front of the New York Times. But it was not true. This was a case, and this is not to say about the pyramids, I don't know about that, but the canals on Mars we now know are not there. It was all a trick of the eye and a trick of the brain. It was because we were looking for patterns. Percival Lowell saw them, and the public wanted to believe this. But Mars is a fascinating place for many reasons. And in fact, we may all be Martians. There was just last week, NASA announced the best evidence yet that Mars may once have had microbial life. There is a theory that some scientists hold that Mars may have seeded life here. We're talking about microbes, but that early on, a few billion years ago, microbes from Mars may have come to Earth and may have planted life here. So it is quite possible that we are all Martians.
And I know some of this sounds far-fetched, folks, right? Oh, we're Martians. We've been star-seeded. But there are elements of our physicality that don't make sense for our planet in the way that the connective tissues and some of the muscle structures and bones are done. This has been talked about for quite a while. We'll discuss more with David Barron, our guest. We've got a lot going on here this evening. Thank you for locking in with us in your home for the best in paranormal talk radio. This is the Paranormal 360. All right, David, we have a lot to unpack this evening as we continue to look at what was going on in this strange awakening that took place at the turn of the century. And by that, I don't mean 1999 to 2000, which kind of breaks my heart, right? When you see the turn of the century, my mind goes back to 1900. Everybody else is clicking into the newer wave. But it's interesting, too, as I discuss on the show, the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was this kind of, it seems like this wave of consciousness that took over our planet. Spirituality was such a big thing. We were gazing to the skies, seeking answers outside of it. Is there any reason that you can see that made people want there to be something beyond our little rock?
Oh, you raise a very good point. And my book really looks as much at humans as it does at Martians. I mean, because you're right. The belief in the Martian civilization back at that time was due in part to what astronomers were seeing on Mars, but it also was due in large part to what was happening on Earth and why people craved the idea that there might in fact be Martians. And I attribute it to several things. First of all, by the late 1800s, science had now for several centuries really undermined a lot of the basis of Christian belief in a God who at least is deeply involved in individual lives. I mean, maybe science could still have the idea of a God that started the universe, but between, you know, from Galileo to Copernicus to Newton to Darwin, it seemed pretty clear based on the science that most of the things that happen in our daily lives, most of, you know, with physical laws, evolution could explain the natural world. And so it was harder to see how at least there was a God who was looking after us day by day. And the Martians became stand-ins for God, in a sense. The Martians, according to Percival Lowell's theory about these canals on Mars, the Martians were a more advanced civilization. They were more moral, more peaceful. In order to survive on a planet running out of water, that meant the whole planet had come together as one. The Martians in the Arctic and the Martians in the equatorial zones all worked together to keep the water flowing through the canals. And so people on Earth were looking to Mars as a better world that in fact could be our saviors. There were these there are these wonderful depictions of Martians in like 1907, 1908. Some of them winged like angels, looking down on the Earth and kind of keeping an eye on us as if they were our guardians. And by 1908, you had pastors sermonizing about the Martians, about how we should emulate them as this civilization that we should strive to become. And there's this wonderful, wonderful article I found that ran in a number of papers in 1909 when there was serious discussion of getting into contact with the Martians and having a conversation with them. And so this article was called Questions Mars Might Answer. And you would think that, well, the questions we would have for Mars would be about technology. How do you build canals? How do you build better airplanes than the Wright brothers were just starting here on Earth? But no, the questions for the Martians were, what is the meaning of life? How can we prevent all human suffering? Where does the soul go when you die? These were the questions the Martians were going to answer. So getting back to your question, I think people on Earth were looking for some sense of spirituality to some beings better than us that could look out for us. And so that explains a lot of why people wanted the Martians to exist.
Oh, I'm so glad that you said that, because I've talked for quite a while about the fact when people are like, Dave, no, this is new, this new renaissance since 2005. We have become such a much more spiritually awake world. And I said, no, the late 1800s, early 1900s, the same thing. And they're like,
absolutely.
Well, what do you see as the cyclical nature? War.
Well, famine, but
pestilence, disease, which is exactly what we've gone through over the last 25 years.
Right. And so I should also say, you know, we think of the late 1800s as this glorious time. It's the Gilded Age, right? Well, right. Yeah, it was the Gilded Age for the few wealthy. But it was actually a time of a lot of discord. There were violent labor unrest in Europe. There was anarchy on the rise. There were terrorist attacks in Paris. The heads of state were being assassinated. William McKinley was assassinated in 1901 by an anarchist. So there was a lot of worry about that our civilization was in peril. And so people were looking elsewhere. But another thing you mentioned, it was a very spiritual time in terms of there were a lot of seances going on in the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. There was a great belief in ghosts and trying to communicate with the dead. It's part of that I also attribute to the fact that kind of traditional Christian beliefs were being undermined to some extent. But also science was showing that there are so many invisible forces. X-rays were discovered in the 1890s, radio waves. Well, if science was showing us that, you know, you could literally communicate invisibly through the air, well, maybe telepathy is real. And so people were studying telepathy and things like that. So there was a great embrace of kind of psychic phenomena at the time.
All right. Let me ask, I'm going to lean way into the woo factor of this. Okay, you've got a guy in the early 1900s. He's looking at Mars. He sees these canals. He makes and pontificates on these concepts and ideas. We don't make it to Mars for another 100 plus years. A lot can happen topographically on a planet, right? Especially when you don't have buildings that might hold off some of the winds and dust. How do we know that these canals have not just filled in? If I'm going to take the full believer's sense of this, how do we know that they haven't just filled in because of 100 plus years of lifelessness on this planet?
Well, who knows what we'll discover when we finally get there, right? I mean, we have yet to put human footprints on Mars, but hopefully that'll happen in my lifetime. We don't know what we'll find underground, but the science so far shows that Mars has really been pretty much a dead world for several billion years. Early on, I mean, we're talking billions of years ago, Mars was, it appears, very Earth-like. It had a thicker atmosphere. It was warmer. It had flowing water. And again, the idea that Mars had life, in fact, may still have life in terms of microbes, has become quite well accepted in the scientific community. I find it hard to imagine that life had time to evolve into some kind of civilization on Mars. I would be highly surprised if we found an actual pyramid on Mars. But sure, let's go look. I mean,
well, isn't that strange, right? We know where that area is. Science has summarily dismissed it as nothing more than shadows and play of light. In my opinion, if you're science, why not drop the rover right into the area where these anomalies are so that we can once and for all show the topographical plane of it, give you the look, the outlay, and say, see, this was never pyramids. These are nothing more than, you know, geographic anomalies. And when the sun shines a certain way, you're going to get the shadow pattern. Here, look, we've got the footage showing how it unveils itself. It always seems so strange to me that we kind of jump into something in an area that's nowhere near what we wanted to really understand. Feed the masses first and then start getting into the rest of the science. And maybe that's just my problem, is I want everyone to be happy. I want them to give us the answers this way. Science doesn't seem to always... believe it or not, they don't call me to get really? My excitement on these things. No, we'll spend millions on masturbating spider monkeys to try to understand what they do, but we won't land the rover near pyramids and other strange structures on Mars. What does that mean? Why wouldn't we do that? These are big questions that may never truly get answered. We do have much more to talk about our guest, David Baron. When we come back, how do we make the jump from possible canals to knowing what the people of Mars were like? We'll discuss that next. David Baron is our guest. His book, The Martians, The True Story of an Alien Craze That Captured Turn-of-the-Century America. We have a link for that book on today's program guide. Pick up the book. Read the book. It is going to blow your mind. It's fascinating. It's fun. It's a great read. But do me a favor, my friends. Don't just buy the book. Don't just read the book. That's a great start. You've got 10 seconds in your schedule every day that you could easily go on Amazon, rate and review the book. Because every time you take the time to give it a few stars and write something about it, it expands that book to a bigger audience. It's something that costs you nothing and takes little to no time, and it helps the authors and all of the researchers that appear on this and other programs. So please do me that favor. David, we talked about the fact that Percival sees what he believes are canals. Suddenly we're leaping into churches talking about, well, this is the way that Martians are, and we come together, and they work from the polar ice caps to the equatorial so that they could. How do we make such giant leaps of faith into what they are, how they work together, and what took place?
Well, right. So there's a lot of links along that chain. We talked about the canals on Mars. It actually started before Percival Lowell. So 1877 in Milan, Italy, an astronomer named Giovanni Schiaparelli decides he's going to make a detailed map of Mars. And he was a highly respected astronomer. And in 1877, Mars made its closest approach to Earth in 15 years. And so that would be a good time to really study the surface. And it was Schiaparelli, when mapping Mars, who saw these weird straight lines. And he called them canali, which in Italian means channels. And he figured they were narrow waterways of some sort, like the English Channel. He wouldn't necessarily mean they were artificial, But the word was mistranslated into English as canals. And so that mistranslation started people thinking about, oh, well, if there are canals on Mars, there must be canal builders. Now, for a while, it was kind of joked about. People understood it was a mistranslation. But when Percival Lowell came along in 1894, he studied science in college. He went to Harvard. He graduated in 1876, but he was not a scientist. He went on, he was a writer. He was studying Asian cultures at a time when, you know, there wasn't much known about Asia in the United States. And he, as he approached age 40, he decided to dedicate himself to studying Mars. So he used his fortune. He came from a very wealthy family in Massachusetts, built an observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's still there, the Lowell Observatory, installed one of the greatest telescopes of the time. And so he, following up on Schiaparelli then, started to look for these canals, and he saw them. So it was Lowell who then took the next step. Well, what is the theory? How do we explain these weird lines? And he's the one who then said, well, he thought it was a global irrigation system. Now, if you're going to have a global irrigation system, and the whole planet is threatened with its own survival, that is, it's running out of water to survive, it needed this irrigation system, well, then logically, the Martian civilization must have come together as one. But also, I'll say another thing. And again, this is all lots of leaps of logic. But Mars was thought to be an older planet than Earth. Now, Mars is smaller than Earth. And so if all the planets eventually were these great molten globs of material that had to first solidify before you could have any life, well, Mars being smaller solidified before the Earth. Just like a teacup will cool before a cauldron will. It's smaller, it dissipates its heat faster. So Mars, it was thought, had life before Earth, therefore it had civilization before Earth, therefore the civilization was more advanced than our civilization. Again, that's a lot of leaps of logic. But so it was, again, thought that the Martians must be in advance of us. And in fact, when you look at how the Martians were depicted, so no one knew what the Martians looked like, but the Martians looked in depictions much like we depict aliens today. They were these big-headed, bald creatures with giant eyes. Now, why was that? Well, okay, if the Martians are...
And more importantly, why did you look at me, the big-headed, bald host of this show, and you said that?
Well, if, again, this is Darwin had just come along a few decades before. Well, if humans had evolved from small-headed, hairy apes, and we now have bigger heads and have lost much of our hair, well, the Martians, who are more advanced than we are, their heads are even bigger and they're even balder. So that's where you get that. Why did the Martians have big eyes? Because Mars is farther from the sun than the Earth is. There's less daylight. So in order to see on Mars, you need bigger eyes to take in more light. So there were all these inferences about what the Martian civilization was like. They were peaceful. They were advanced technologically, what they looked like. But it was all based on again, a lot of inferences. And so by the time you get to sermonizing about Mars, you've really gone quite a way down that road.
You have amateur astronomers around the planet now that are capturing things, noticing things. Listen, we give credit because some of these amateur astronomers have found comets, asteroids, disturbances in the field, right out there in the gravitational field, to notice that there's something else going on. And some of the footage, I don't know if you've seen it, David, but some of the footage that they've caught from Mars and the moon, where it looks like there are craft lifting off and moving. Why will we give credence to they found an asteroid that's even further out than Mars or further out than the moon? And wow, David Barron, you know, he's that amateur astronomer and he found these things and now he's got this or that or the other. But then we summarily dismiss when it looks like we found proof that something is visiting these nearby bodies.
Well, I haven't seen that, what you're talking about. But, you know, I'm all for skepticism. I think people should be skeptical about government, skeptical about, you know, the scientific establishment. We should also be skeptical of ourselves. It's very easy to fool the eye and to fool the brain. And again, that's one of the lessons of my book. I mean, I say a book both as a cautionary tale and an inspirational one. Cautionary because, again, you know, was there ever a civilization on Mars? I doubt it, but I can't prove there wasn't. However, was Percival Lowell seeing actual canals on Mars? The answer is no. I mean, it was shown that the lines he saw on Mars really were optical illusions, that the eye, when looking at a planet so far away through a telescope, that, you know, a telescope good enough to see the surface, but not good enough to make it out in great detail, the eye can link up, you know, various dots on the surface and perceive lines that aren't there. And that's what was happening with Percival Lowell. You know, the eye
David,
can't.
Why do you hate happiness? Why?
But I don't.
Do you have anything you want to tell us about Santa and the Tooth Fairy next, David? Is that what you want to say?
The wonderful thing is that that craze about the Martians, even though Lowell was wrong, he got a lot right. And he really did inspire the human imagination. We can talk about this after the break, but it was the excitement about Mars that inspired so much science fiction, that really started science fiction. It was the excitement about Mars based on those canals that launched us into space. The early rocket scientists decided to become rocket scientists because they were so excited as kids about Mars. So again, we could talk more about that.
Isn't that fascinating? I love that, right? And that's when people will attack sometimes shows like mine. You know, what are you out there talking about this tripe, this ridiculousness? I'm of the mind that why aren't we allowing our imagination to expand? When we limit ourselves to just the view we have outside our window, we would have gone nowhere on this planet.
I agree.
It's the concept. Look at all of science that has come from science fiction. Things that were part of Star Trek are now part of our real world because people were inspired to create it. We'll be back with more David Baron right after this.
Greetings from the Shadow, and welcome to Shadows Eat. My name is Jeff Belanger. I'm an author, podcaster, and explorer of the unexplained. For 30 years, I've been investigating the paranormal, UFOs, monsters, and things that bump in the night. Lately, you may have noticed how major TV networks and even social media networks have been pushing our favorite subject back into the shadows. I say good. That's why I launched Shadowzine, a monthly underground publication that covers your favorite topics in depth by some of the leading writers and researchers out there. If you're looking for 30-second TikTok clips, go somewhere else. If you're ready for a deeper dive, put down your phone and pick up Shadowzine. You can't find it in stores. This is old school print. Head to shadowzine.com and be part of the underground revolution. That's shadowzine.com, and I'll see you in the shadow.
And check it out. The brand new issue number 8 is out and available of Shadowzine. If you would like a signed copy, you can find one on my website at paranormal60.com. That's paranormal60.com. I investigated the case, which I think is truly one of the coolest UFO eyewitness cases in history. And it took place in Minnesota, Warren, Minnesota, 1979, the Warren UFO incident. It has people that were eyewitnesses to this, also left behind one of the coolest pieces of evidence, an entire police car that was affected by the contact with this strange craft, affected in a way that even the car manufacturer and other science-based organizations that investigated it could not explain. And all these years later, I was able to uncover one more piece of evidence, one more story still waiting to be heard. And with my good friend Scott Walter, the forensic geologist, we were able to put it to the test. Science said we found something, but we can't identify it. That's crazy. You want more information? Check out the new Shadow Zine. You can get it at shadowzine.com or get a signed copy at paranormal60.com. David Baron, my guest this evening, and he's here with us for the next hour as well. His book, The Martians, the true story of an alien craze that captured turn-of-the-century America, out and available right now. We have a link for it in today's program guide. When we talk about what's going on with this and the fascination and the way that it awakened the world, I don't know if you're familiar with this, David, but Tesla was fascinated with this and believed that he was receiving radio frequency and waves and possible messages from outer space using his technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. In 1899. So let's say a word about Nikola Tesla. I mean, Nikola Tesla was a genius inventor. Right. He was responsible for our modern system of electrical power generation and distribution. He famously battled it out with Thomas Edison over whether we should be using alternating current or direct current, and Tesla with alternating current won. So he was a genius and a celebrity, and lived the high life in the 1890s. And when he kind of moved on from studying how electricity is transmitted by wires to studying how electrical signals could be transmitted through the air. Today we call it radio. Back then it was wireless. And the idea was, could you transmit telegraph signals, dots and dashes, through the air? Marconi, of course, was also working on this. 1899, Nikola Tesla traveled to Colorado, where I live. He set up an experimental laboratory in Colorado Springs to study how electrical signals could be transmitted through the air. And one night, he was alone in his laboratory, and he was listening for signals. Now, this is before, I mean, no one was sending out artificial signals. This was just listening to the sounds of the earth. Lightning will make electrical signals and so forth. And he was listening for just natural radio signals. And he hears this strange pattern of this click, 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 repeating like that in triplets. And he could not figure out, he figured there was no way it was coming from Earth. He couldn't think of where else it came from. Well, he knew about Percival Lowell and the Martians, and he convinced himself that he was getting a signal from Mars. And he announced this to the world right at the beginning of the 20th century. It was New Year's Eve, right, as the 20th century was about to begin. And it just completely took off. I mean, this accelerated the Mars craze in a whole new way. It was all over newspapers, people, that Nikola Tesla got signals from the Martians. And now he had plans to communicate back. He was going to build this global network of communications towers that would connect the Earth and also connect us to Mars. So Tesla's very much a part of this tale. And he was a fascinating character. Again, I mean, we don't know what he was listening to. Again, I would say he did not get signals from Mars, because at least the Martian civilization that Lowell was looking for really wasn't there. But we don't know what he picked up that night. It's still kind of a mystery.
I had the opportunity to work with a gentleman by the name of Frank Sumption, which is a name that you may not be familiar with, David, but he, going through an old Popular Mechanics magazine, I believe it was, found instructions on creating this kind of spirit radio. And he started creating these things called Frank's boxes.
Hmm.
And he would make them out of cigar boxes and wires and radio. And he would put these things together. And essentially, they were a broken AM/FM radio that just constantly scanned the dials. But the concept was, we were giving a template of noise and audio fragments to allow the spirit realm or something to communicate with us. And it sounds insane. And I went and I met with Frank, and I worked side by side with him on an investigation, and I watched him with the box, and he allowed me to use it during a paranormal investigation. And we started getting some, what we believe to be spiritual activity, some kind of like an electronic seance, if you will. Voices started coming through that were in direct response to the questions we were asking. When we were finished, Frank looked at me and he said, "Dave, I mean, I know why I created this. I know what the genesis of this was, but I've got to be honest with you. I've never tried to communicate with ghosts. I've always tried to communicate with aliens. That's why there's UFOs and things carved on each one of these." And he said, "Can I show you what I do?" I said, "Certainly." And he broke out the Frank's box and started communicating, and a whole different set of voices started coming through that were very sci-fi, very echoey and weird. And it was so strange. Again, was it the intention of us, the radio operator, and what we hoped or wanted to experience? Was he really tapping into something else? So even in the 21st century, this imagination, this what if exists amongst us. And I'm super excited to keep talking about this. We've got another hour ahead of us, folks, so stay with us. What began as a whimsical fascination quickly hardened into conviction and controversy. We've explored Lowell's canals, the the public's fascination with Martian life, and the scientists and inventors who dared to imagine a connection between worlds. But belief, as we know, can be fragile. After the break, we'll look at how this mania unraveled, what it cost Lowell personally, and how it still echoes in our obsession with Mars today. We'll do that next